Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Brett Hayes, what is SCOTUS and what are they going to be up to in the next couple of years?
Well, the Supreme Court of the United States, of course, is SCOTUS. They are in the midst of their session, and they're doing all kinds of interesting things, as they almost always are. They've already taken some kind of interesting action that has been high profile, such as declining to hear appeals about the constitutionality of same-sex marriage, which has basically left same-sex marriage to be constitutionally protected in a significant portion of the country. But they're also deciding some rather important issues that will play electorally in the future. For example, this year they will be deciding a case coming out of Arizona that deals with a nonpartisan commission that is tasked with redrawing congressional and state legislative district lines, right, so that they're going to be responsible for redistricting. And the Arizona, this emerged out of a ballot initiative whereby the voters of Arizona effectively reallocated that power from the legislature to this nonpartisan, nonpolitical commission.
Something that couldn't happen in New York State, just as a parenthesis, because New Yorkers just voted one that said it had to be brought back to the legislature for final approval.
That's right. So, I mean, and it's really interesting in that sense that we see some movement now towards this. There's a recognition that that gerrymandering, you know, the redrawing of district lines for partisan advantage is a systemic problem, that it is an undemocratic problem. The question in some ways then is whether, in fact, the Supreme Court will allow this to move forward. Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution seemingly vests that power in state legislatures. And so there's a question of whether, in fact, that legislative power can be reallocated to a body that is not the legislature itself. Mm. And this is a part of a kind of a larger conversation that the court is having with the electoral process, right? We know all about their decisions in the realm of campaign finance, right? They've been very hostile to reforms attempting to minimize the influence of money. And the question is whether, in fact, they will be hostile to reducing partisan influence as well. We know that, and I know that this is, you know, something that is a critique that's near and dear to your heart, that they are essentially a Republican legislature, the court is.
Let's face facts. They are a Republican House. That's the third House. Supreme Court is five Republicans to four Democrats.
That part is true in terms of the
partisan,
and the ideological distribution on the court. They don't always act exactly like a legislature, as we've discussed in the past. But I think on this particular issue, the decisions have been 5-4, and they have had dramatic impact. Right, we just went through the most expensive election in our history, over $4 billion.
Thanks to them and Citizens United.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and so deeply troubling. But they've also then done other things in the recent past where they coming out of Arizona again, they've basically said that Arizona's public financing scheme that gave more money to a candidate that was being outspent by private money was a violation of the other candidates, the ones spending their own money, of their free speech because it created a chilling effect. Right. So, in other words, something that was designed to minimize the effects of money, the court also struck down. So the question is whether this, in fact, will fold into that same box such that the court will be skeptical of removing a power that parties have long enjoyed in a way to create advantage in the political system, right? We've seen this time and again in places like Texas. Texas has done this extremely well in terms of creating more seats for themselves. The Republicans in Texas have created more seats for themselves than kind of a natural distribution would dictate. Now, this is a challenging issue in the sense that we know that Democrats have a tendency to live in more densely populated areas. So in some ways, as a default, they're more likely to be packed into a legislative district in a way that Republicans may not, who are more suburban and rural. However, you know, the degree to which partisans are free to kind of muck with the system to give themselves clear advantage creates significant effects. Right now, the House is such that the Democrats need to win about 53% of the national vote in order to get to 50% representation
because
in
the
body.
In
because
state legislatures have reapportioned.
That's exactly right. And so there's something that's fundamentally unfair there from a Democratic lens. We know that the court at present does not have a politician on it, which is a change historically. For quite some time, the court regularly had somebody who had been an elected official on it, and often several members. And there seems to be a lack of sensitivity to kind of the partisan elements of our electoral system by the court. Rather, they're looking at it strictly through a lens of, say, free speech in campaign finance or in something like this in the distribution of powers.
Let me just stop you for a second. You know, the thing I like about you is that, but the thing I think is maybe a little naive is the idea that you think that philosophically this is the way that the court makes its decisions. I, on the other hand, am far more cynical than you are. I say you got five Republicans up there. They'll find any philosophical underpinning that they can to support keeping Republicans in power. And then that's the way that it works. And in the end, that's why these are 5-4 decisions.
That works for explaining certain areas of the court, like campaign finance. It doesn't explain all of them. There are lots of areas of the court where the vote distribution cuts across ideological lines.
I'm not so sure. In other words, I think every once in a while they say, okay, because we're getting found out here, we should throw them one.
Well, I mean, but when you throw them one for something like upholding the Affordable Care Act, it is a major one.
Well, it had to be because they couldn't, the word you used was to muck with the system. They knew that if they declared that unconstitutional, there would be hell to pay. And they had a lot of history, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and all those things that court said no to that really enraged the American people.
Yeah, but the difference between the 1930s, right, 1933 through 1937, is that the Democrats had unified control over the national government. In other words, they controlled with large majorities the House and Senate and the White House, so that they did not have legislative protection. Whereas this particular Supreme Court, I mean, it wasn't like Obama was going to be able to say, I know what we'll do. Let's strip the court of jurisdiction or let's pack the court. And House Republicans would have been saying like, OK, we're on board with that. So they actually had quite a bit of cover and they could have struck down the Affordable Care Act. In fact, I think Republicans in the Senate, you know, thinking about filibusters and the like, would have been, you know, thrilled to have been able to give them that cover. I think they would have made a lot of political hay out of that. But, regardless, I do think that, I mean, ideology is really an important explanation of what goes on the court. It's not the only one. And I think we're going to, in some ways, see if, in fact, the court has any different sensitivity to this issue about redistricting than they have for campaign speech. Clearly, they have been terrible on campaign speech. The rulings have just opened up the floodgates. No one is happy with this system. No one. If you look at the public opinion polls on the left and the right, there's overwhelming support for changing the policy.
Not among the politicians who got there that way.
Right. But in terms of this being a something that you could see a kind of a popular movement for, the support is there. You just have to, in fact, kind of be able to find a mechanism for change. And that's much more difficult when we're talking about the court.
Okay, we have to go, Brad Hayes, but I want to leave you with this one thought. As I used to say to my brother all the time, want to bet $5 on how this comes out? Anyway, it's great to have Professor Brad Hayes from Union College with us and our political scientist in residence. It's just great to have you here, Brad. We so enjoy your coming around and educating us.
Thanks, Alan.